In Mark chapter 5, we're going to begin reading in verse 22 right now. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, came. And when he saw him, he fell at Jesus' feet and begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live." So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years, and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well." Immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, "Who touched me?" And he looked around to see who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Now while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid. Only believe." And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him, and entered where the child was lying. Then he took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumma," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age. And they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. There's a game that is regularly played in hospitals and doctor's offices and medical clinics. It's called What They Say, What They Mean. Here's how it goes, as quoted in the Reader's Digest. What they say. It could be one of several things. What they mean, I haven't the foggiest idea what's wrong with you. What they say, are you sure you haven't had this before? What they mean, because you've got it again. What they say, I'd like to run that test again. But what they mean, the lab lost your blood sample. What they say, insurance should cover most of the cost. What that means, you have to sell your house to cover the rest. What they say, these pills have very few side effects. What they mean, you may experience sudden hair growth on your palms. What they say, why don't you tell me your symptoms one more time? What they mean, I don't even remember who you are. What they say, there's a lot of this going around. what they mean. We'll give it a name as soon as we figure out what it is. What we say. We believe that Jesus heals the sick. What we mean. We believe the Bible stories where Jesus healed the sick in ancient times, but we're really not sure if Jesus heals people today. We say we believe, but what do we mean? What do we really believe when we're sick? Or when a person we love is sick and fighting a dreadful disease? The subject of divine healing can be very perplexing. It can be a baffling topic. There have been times when I have prayed for people, for someone to be healed, and God healed them. There have been other times when I prayed a similar prayer. The person deserved to be healed just as much as the first guy. The illness was no more difficult to heal. Yet the person died, and I wondered why. It reminds me of the Saturday night. The pastor was leading a healing service. He was in the altar of the church asking God to heal people of a whole host of ailments. That's when old Bubba approached him. "Preacher, will you pray for my hearing?" The pastor stuck his finger in Bubba's ear and started praying his loud, hearty prayer. With his free hand, he even dabbed him on the forehead with some oil. He even started shouting and speaking in tongues. Finally, the pastor stopped and he asked, "Bubba, what about your hearing?" Bubba answered, "Preacher, I'm not sure. My hearing ain't till Monday morning at the county courthouse." Hey, the subject of healing can be confusing and perplexing. Yet this morning, I have words of hope for folks who are battling an illness, or who are helping someone close to them battle an illness. I read recently where 44.4 million Americans serve in the role of caregiver to someone who is sick. To all of us who have been touched by an illness, Jesus has words of hope. You know, I used to view this morning's passage as two separate stories. The healing of a hemorrhaging woman and the raising of Jairus' daughter. But I've since come to see these stories as interrelated. Here are really three acts in one drama. Put it all together, and it teaches us how Jesus heals in different ways and at different times. Notice first what Jairus' daughter and the suffering woman have in common. Both women are in a battle with an illness. They are fighting for their very lives. In terms of age and social status and station in life and personal history and family support and even religious affiliation, these women are very, very different. In days gone by, in times of health, their paths probably would have never crossed. But disease has placed them now in the same foxhole, in combat with the same foe. These girls are members in the sisterhood of sickness. They are both desperate. They have exhausted other remedies. And yet on the same day, in the same hour, just minutes apart, their lives will intersect at the feet of Jesus. And here is their strongest common denominator. Both believe that Jesus can heal their sick bodies. Have you ever spent serious time in the intensive care unit of a major hospital? You know, the ICU is a sad place. But there, a strange alliance develops. People from all walks of life, from every population demographic and economic tax bracket and racial ethnicity, suddenly merge there in the ICU into one family. In the ICU, distinctions melt away. A man becomes a person first, a father second, a white man or a black man third. The roofer loves his wife as much as the company president loves his wife. Everyone who waits in the ICU pulls for everyone else. You see, when life is in limbo, secondary stuff no longer seems important. Though the women in our story are unaware of each other's existence, they are co-stars in the same drama. Sickness bonds them together as it does us all. If you're a living, breathing human being, and I hope you are if you're here this morning, you are susceptible to disease. Name it, and it can probably strike. We live in a fallen world full of bacteria and germs and viruses. We occupy fallen bodies that have been genetically damaged by sin. At times, we lack the resistance needed to fight off an infection. And it's not God's fault. Understand, His world was perfect, disease-free. Humanity asked for this when Adam went his own way and bit the forbidden fruit and infected creation. And since that fateful day, anything God does to heal our sickness is an act of His mercy. This morning's text offers words of hope to people who struggle with illness. And hope is crucial for a person in this fight. Medical professionals now realize that hope itself has some healing power. Author John Ortberg cites a medical study that focused on 122 first-time heart attack victims. They were all men. Of the 25 with the most pessimistic attitude, 21 were dead 8 years later. Of the 25 most optimistic victims, only 6 died in the same time span. You see, a loss of hope increased the odds of death by 300%. Hope was the single greatest determining factor for survival, more than blood pressure, heart damage, or cholesterol level. Better to eat Twinkies with hope than broccoli in despair. When you battle an illness, and we all do at some point, the best doctor to hire is hope, Dr. Hope. Let's look a little closer at the rays of hope we find in this story. Remember, it's one story, but it's in three acts. Act 1, a desperate dead seeks Jesus. Act 2, a bleeding woman grabs hold of Jesus and finds healing. Act 3, a dead daughter is still healed by Jesus. The opening act starts in verse 22. Let's read it again. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death." Now understand this man's desperation. Jairus was a ruler in the synagogue, the local synagogue there in Capernaum. It was a prestigious post. His position meant that he was wealthy and that he was real well respected in the Capernaum community. He was also religious. He observed Jewish protocol. And this is what put him at odds, in a sense, with Jesus. For the synagogue ruler was a fixture of the status quo, whereas Jesus was a firebrand. He was a dissident. Jesus marched to his own drumbeat. Jesus operated outside the bounds of the religious establishment. Socially, Jesus and Jairus were poles apart. And it was a giant leap of faith for this ruler of the synagogue to admit that Jesus was the Messiah and to solicit his help. I mean, Jairus had to step over his personal pride and public criticism and even fear of the Jews to come to Jesus. And what humbled Jairus has toppled many a man. A love for a daughter. You see, he had a little princess at home. Luke says that she was Jairus' only daughter. They played Barbies. And they went on dates. And they danced together across the kitchen floor. And they ate ice cream. She was 12 years old. But now she lies at the point of death. And this dad is desperate. I know the emotion. There's my one and only princess. And at 2 weeks old, my only daughter was taken to the doctor. Kathy noticed her irregular breathing. We were told that Natalie was a candidate for sudden infant death syndrome. We were warned, one morning, you might just walk to the crib and... The doctor sent us home with a monitor. We strapped it to Natalie's chest. If her breathing stopped, a shrill noise would sound out. That first night, we had 45 alarms. From November 1984 to November 1985, Kathy and I didn't get a lot of sleep. For a year, our hopes and dreams were put on hold. That's what illness does, by the way. When you're fighting for survival, life gets interrupted. It crawls to a standstill. Jairus, he forgot that the synagogue needed painting. He neglected to assign the weekly scripture reading. Important appointments just sort of slipped his mind. All this dad could think about was his little girl hanging onto life by a thread. And Jairus, he was confused. In fact, when you look at this man, he was a bundle of contradictions. Matthew and Peter, they were on-site observers, and yet they report it differently. Matthew quotes Jairus as saying, "My daughter has just died." Whereas Mark, who was Peter's spokesman, he recalls the words, "My little daughter lies at the point of death." Well, what was she? Is she dead or is she alive? Hey, when someone is ill, or if they're tending to someone who's sick, I hope you allow them a little bit of confusion and you ignore their contradictions. For battling an illness is not the time to hold a person accountable for the rationality of every statement. When people are weak and sick, they say lots of stuff that they don't really mean. Pain causes us to make strange remarks. We question our faith, or we assign blame, or we mull over regrets and if-onlys, or we spend a lot of time in denial. It reminds me of the three men who were discussing what they'd like said at their funeral. The first man explained, "I want people to say that he was a great humanitarian, that he cared about his community and the people around him." The second man commented, "I want folks to say that he was a great family man, that he always loved his wife, and that he provided and protected his kids." Finally, the third man was asked what he wanted said at his funeral. He answered, "I want everyone to say, 'Hey, look at that. He's moving.'" It could be that this father really didn't know if his daughter was dead or alive. You know, there are situations today where modern medical professionals, with all of their know-how and knowledge, still have a tough time pinpointing the exact moment that a person passes from life to death. Maybe the little girl was brain dead, but her body still functioned. Perhaps her breasts were so shallow, he wasn't sure if they were breasts at all. It could be that the little girl was drifting in and out of consciousness. Remember, Luke was an actual physician. He wasn't there that day, but he wrote his gospel after interviewing people who were, researching their stories. And in Luke chapter 8, the doctor concluded that the girl was not dead yet. She was dying, Luke said. So here's the father's desperation. His daughter is terminally ill. Call it what you want, but she's on death's doorstep. Unless he finds help soon, she'll be gone. And so Jairus finds Jesus and asks, "Come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed and she will live." And Jesus went with him. Now the scene shifts. Act 2 begins. And a great multitude followed him and thronged him. I mean, it was a mob of humanity pressing in on all sides. Walking the streets of Capernaum that day was like dancing in a mosh pit at a rock concert. Verse 25. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. Notice the duration of her illness. About the time Jairus' little princess was born, this lady began to die. She started hemorrhaging life. She was bleeding to death. She had menstrual problems, uncontrolled bleeding. Perhaps it was caused by a fibroid tumor. Verse 29 refers to her condition as a fountain of blood. Imagine, for 12 years, this woman suffers from anemia and all of its symptoms. Fatigue, weakness, lack of concentration, lethargy, shortness of breath, pale skin, palpitations, heart palpitations, sweatiness. The effects can be many and severe. But none of these physical side effects were as painful as the cost she incurred socially and spiritually. It's probable that her disease caused her to postpone her marriage and even put plans for a family on hold. It certainly disqualified her from participating in temple worship. The Jewish law declared a person with a bodily emission off limits for a period of time. Since this woman's flow of blood was constant, she was never fully accepted. And she also suffered emotionally and financially from her condition. Notice verse 26 tells us this woman had suffered many things from many physicians. Now, physicians are supposed to alleviate suffering. Instead, the doctors that treated this woman were causing her additional suffering. And we know some of the preposterous remedies the Jewish authorities prescribed for a woman with an issue of blood. No less than 11 different remedies are mentioned in the Jewish Talmud. Here are a few examples, some of the more superstitious ones. Take the gum of Alexandria, the weight of a silver coin, mix it with alum and crocus, let them be bruised together and given in wine to the ailing woman. Here's another cure. Boil 3 pints of Persian onions in wine and give it to her to drink. Here's another treatment. Carry a barley kernel that was taken from the cow patties of a female donkey. And here's my favorite. Set her at a fork in the road. Put a cup of wine in her right hand. Then have someone come up behind her, frighten her, and shout, "Arise from your flux." That sounds like more a cure for hiccups than excessive bleeding. Can you imagine 12 years of this kind of rigmarole? Mark sums it up. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She'd wiped out her 401k. She'd spent all of her savings. She had wasted all of her money on these silly, superstitious cures. Hey, let me suggest, the study of medicine has come a long, long way since the first century AD. Modern vaccines and antibiotics and beta blockers and the like have replaced barley kernels and Egyptian resin. Today we are protected from diseases that once killed. But understand, all medicine, ancient and modern, lacks the ability to heal. For only God heals. You see, our bodies function through chemical processes. Doctors today inject medicines into our body to immunize us from disease or to kill off harmful germs. We can manipulate the body's chemistry to help it heal, but the body's ability to rejuvenate itself is a miracle that comes only from God. For example, a doctor can set a broken arm, but he doesn't cause the 2 fractured pieces of bone to mesh and to grow together again. That takes a miracle of God's healing. In a sense, all healing is divine healing. The healing process is God's design. But here's the irony. Despite the advances of modern medicine, there are times when we still find ourselves in the same situation as this woman. The doctors are just guessing. We feel like a guinea pig. Nothing they prescribe really works. Modern medicine is a gift from God, but what happens when it's not enough? What if you find yourself in this woman's shoes? You have suffered many things from many physicians. You've spent all that you had, and you're no better, perhaps even worse. There is a reason, guys, we call them practicing physicians. There's only one great physician, and his name is Jesus. Where do you go when your illness baffles the doctors? The answer should be simple, but it's not always so. I know a fella, he attended our church. He suffered from a lung disorder. And like Jairus and this woman, this man became desperate. He too had wasted his money on doctors and hospitals and medicines to make him better. They had even made him worse. And in his desperation, he went off the deep end. He abandoned truth for a healing. The last time I heard, my friend had turned to a New Age practitioner. The man claimed to channel spirits from the past. He was nothing more than a sorcerer. He denied the truth about Jesus, but promised to make my friend feel better. Perhaps he did, I don't know. The devil has power too. But if my desperate pal had trusted Jesus, and if Jesus had wanted him healed, I am certain that he would have been healed. This is what happens in Act 2 of our drama. A supernatural healing takes place. Verse 27. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well." Notice hers was not a perfect faith. The ancients believed that there was healing power in the garments of a holy man. And this woman had subscribed to that superstition. Even though her faith wasn't the purest, nevertheless, it had the right object. And that's what gave her power. For when she trusted in the living Lord Jesus, suddenly his power was unleashed in the moment of that touch. Mark tells us, immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. Immediately, miraculously, she was healed. This was no gradual process. It was sudden and spontaneous. And Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" You see, Jesus knew. He had sensed the power leaving his body flowing to this diseased woman. The woman knew she had been healed. Jesus knew he had been touched. I hope you realize there is a big difference between casually rubbing shoulders with Jesus and gripping him in faith. These are two very different experiences. It means very little to be in a crowd of Christians, to sing a few songs, to even raise your hands or read a verse or mumble a prayer in God's direction. Just kind of casually interact around Jesus. That means very little. But power goes out from him when you reach out to Jesus and you get a grip. You see, not a lot happens when you just sort of brush up against him. But get God between your fingers. Grab Jesus with a desperate grip, with an open hand, with the intention of giving your life over to his healing, and power will flow from him to you. Evidently, not everyone realizes the difference between a glance and a grab. For in verse 31, his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." And all the while that Jesus has been interacting now with this woman, he's forced Jairus to wait. Hey, sometimes we have to wait on our healing. This brings us to the final act in the drama. While he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" These men make a horrible, horrible assumption. This is horrible. The people who brought the bad news assumed that because the little girl was dead, Jesus couldn't heal her. Why trouble the teacher any further? Never make that assumption. It is a lie. Just the opposite is true. You see, Jesus can heal me spontaneously and supernaturally 1,000 times of 1,000 diseases. But as a Christian, my ultimate and permanent and total healing will occur only after I die. Resurrection is my final healing. Here's why healing is such a confusing subject. We see healing only from our limited, earthbound perspective. We view it only in the here and now. You see, if I had been Jairus, I would have fought a bad attitude this whole time that Jesus is dealing with this bleeding woman. Think about it. Jesus' mercy on the woman was a death sentence to his daughter. Why the delay? Why doesn't Jesus sense the urgency? My daughter would still be alive if Jesus had refused to be interrupted. You see, there were throngs of people that day. But only Jesus understood that it was just as easy for him to heal a person after they were dead as it would be beforehand. We forget that Jesus' most impressive miracle, the day he resurrected a man who had been dead for 4 rotting, stinking days, his raising of Lazarus still didn't keep Lazarus from having to be a part of 2 funerals. We forget that, don't we? It's obviously God's will that nobody leaves this place alive. Have you figured that out yet? That death is kind of everybody's exit. Do you know that? Even the man that Jesus delivered from death, Lazarus, eventually succumbed to disease and died a second time. The raising of Lazarus was miraculous and meaningful, but it wasn't permanent. And I'm certain that Lazarus would have been happier if he just stayed in heaven and never returned. I mean, who aspires to be a 2-time corpse? The raising of Lazarus was only a preview of his healing in heaven. Guys, only Jesus sees this big picture. And this is why he doesn't share our sense of urgency. This is why he doesn't panic or feel like he has to act now. He sees our healing from eternity. He knows that ultimate healing will only take place after we die, once we reach heaven. And Jesus expects us to trust him with the where and when and how of our healing. You see, healing is not just a real-time event. It's a process that God has embedded in nature, and it's aided by the wisdom that God gives to men. Healing does happen at times spontaneously and supernaturally, when God wills and when doctors fail. God can heal us miraculously to show his love and bring him glory. And most importantly, if you're a Christian, healing is your destiny. You have to know that. Did you know that there is a river in heaven? And on the banks of this river grow the tree of life. And according to the Bible, this tree sprouts leaves. And the leaves, we're told, are for the healing of the nations. Healing is a miracle that continues forever. Let's read the rest of the story. As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid, only believe." And in the next few verses, Jesus drives out the mourners and he ushers the parents into the room where the little girl is lying. And in verse 41, we're told, then he took the child by the hand and said to her, Talitha kuma, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age. And they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. And I got to tell you, I love this story's final touch. Just perfect. Jesus orders up soup and crackers for the little girl. Get this little girl something to eat. She's hungry. This is so appropriate. For this is what you have to understand this morning. In the mind of Jesus, chicken noodle soup and desperate miracle receiving touches and leaves from the tree of life are all one and the same. For all healing comes from God. Reach out today and trust Jesus, and you, my friend, will be healed. Father, we thank you this morning for your word, for words of hope to people who are battling an illness. And Lord, if we're not battling this illness right now, we will be soon. For it strikes us all from time to time. We live in a fallen world, inside fallen bodies, and we are susceptible. And Lord, this is why we need your help. For we know, Lord, that you are the God of healing. Healing is a part of your very nature. You have embedded it within our bodies. Lord, you perform it at times supernaturally and spontaneously. Certainly when we reach heaven, we will receive our ultimate healing. Healing is all around us, and it comes from you. Lord, help us to trust you with our healing in whatever way you see fit to dispense it. Lord, help us this morning if we're sick and if we're in need. Help us not ignore the obvious lesson from this story that if we'll reach up and get God between our fingers, if we'll grab hold of you with the kind of faith that turns our lives over to your healing, if we can grab hold of you with that kind of faith this morning, power will go out from you and it will flow to us and we'll be healed. Lord, thank you that regardless of our experience with healing on this earth, that you are not limited to healing us just before we die. You will heal us in the most spectacular and incredible and ultimate and total way after we die. We thank you that for believers, if we trust you, healing is in our future one way or the other. And Lord, I pray today that many people here who have been fighting disease, who have been fearing disease, will turn their healing over to you, over to Jesus, the God who heals. Work in our hearts today. And even more, work in our bodies today. In Jesus' name. So I'll stand.